Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. And as Susan had no music at the end, nor do I have any music to begin today, because I have not yet conquered the ability to play Semper Paratus with lyrics as well as music. And I need another tutorial from our stalwart Captain Truman O'Brien to do that. So no music today, but I have a lovely friend, and you all will recall that from the captain's chair, I do not have guests. I only have friends. And so my friend this afternoon is Nancy Sipple, and Nancy is connected in some way with Gary Sipple, who was my friend last week. And Nancy and I are going to talk about some quite different things with one exception. So Nancy, before we get into what you and I want to talk about, which is some new initiatives on your part, we're going to lead into it gently, and I want your side of the ostrich story. And the reason that I'm asking for the ostrich story is because after the broadcast last week, I had a couple of comments from my Coast Guard people expressing some interest in the raising of ostriches. And it, I had to confess that it's a subject in which I have little interest, except because it's being done or was done by friends, and certainly no knowledge. So let's start off to put me at ease today. Because you think I get nervous when I do this? I don't really.
I do.
That's why we're going to talk about ostriches before we talk about other things.
Okay.
So, what's your side of the ostrich story?
Well, Gary and I were building playhouses, as many people know. We even won a prize in the 1989 Strawberry Festival for displaying one of our playhouses. And a friend of ours who lived down in the southeast corner of Washington made playhouse furniture for us. And one day we drove down there to pick up some furniture, and he had just bought a couple ostriches. And we thought, this is weird, this is strange, but it was interesting. And he gave us a whole bunch of information about ostriches. And we went home, and the information sat on the coffee table in the living room for months and months. And then we just decided to look into it. We had 13 acres, and we weren't doing anything with them. And we both loved animals, and it was the breeding period of the industry, and so there was money to be made, and we just decided to do it. So we bought 6 ostriches.
And the rest of the story has been proclaimed to my worldwide listenership on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band. And so we're going to move from that. I'm going to offer you another investment opportunity.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
All right. So,
yes. So
in my email traffic today, I got the following email, which I am going to put out to the literally thousands of people that listen every week to From the Captain's Chair. And so this was an email that was in my traffic this morning. And I'm going to read the entire email because that's the only way that you get the full flavor of what the offer is. So that, and because you're here and because you're my friend, not just for today, because you have done many, many good things for me and for my family over the years and for the island community. But because you're here, you get first crack at this. But I have to warn you that this is going to go out to people all over the world. And there's going to be a real scramble to get in on this good thing. So here's what it is. I got this email from a Mrs. Akari Aoba. And there we go. And Mrs. Akari Aoba addresses me as follows. Dear beloved one, not dear Captain Joe, not dear anything except beloved one. I've never heard of Mrs. Akari Aoba before. My name is Mrs. Akari Aoba. I'm getting old, a widow, suffering from a long illness. I'm currently admitted to a private hospital here in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. I have some funds I inherited from my late and loving husband, Dr. Stephen Aoba. The amount of, in U.S. dollars, $4.5 million, he deposited in one of the leading banks here. Now, in Ivory Coast, there cannot be more than one leading bank.
Probably not.
Probably not. And I need, and here's the catch, an honest and God-fearing person. Now, you fit both of those qualifications.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
That can use these funds for God's work. And 30% of the total funds will be offered to you for helping me. Hoping to receive your reply. Fat chance of that, Akari. God bless you, your sister in the Lord, Mrs. Akari Aoba. Now, Nancy, I know that you are scrambling for a piece of paper and something to write down, but if you want to be this, here's the way. You send me an email to CaptainJoe@centrytel.net, and I will, everyone who wants to get in touch with Akari Aoba, my beloved friend, can send me an email. And in fact, people can send me an email to that if they want to talk about anything else that we talk about. And so Nancy, the custom with this program is that I also cover all of my regular features. And you are invited to make comments on anything that I talk about, even though you feel you may not know anything about the subject. I frequently talk about things about which I don't know much. So I usually start off with the binnacle list. And so the binnacle list this morning is, I'm putting myself on it. My sailor has gone AWOL. And I hope that it is a temporary thing and that he will return clean, sober, and in uniform. But I don't have a good feeling about this because he's pretty punctual about showing up in answer to the mess call. And he did not show up last night for dinner. So when the broadcast is over, I'll be going back to captain's quarters and starting a true, proper and seaman-like search and rescue mission, but I have shared a lot with my with people from the captain's chair, and when all of you figure out that maybe the captain's not sounding quite up to where he usually is, you are usually right, and that's what's going on today. So I will report back next week as to whether or not he returns clean, sober, and in uniform. And if not, what I think happened. So, Nancy, now we're going to talk about, first of all, what you have done briefly for so many years on the island, why you've decided to move on to something else, and then tell me what that something else is, because we covered it only very briefly, and so you're going to be giving me new information as well.
Well, I've been a real estate agent for 22 years, and I'm not exactly moving on to something else right away. I am the second oldest real estate agent on the island right now. Nancy Davidson, and she'll appreciate me mentioning this, is a year older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm feeling that I'm going to kind of gently phase out and not beat the bushes as vigorously as I used to, and probably still do some business with friends and old clients, and maybe pass along some new business to some of the young gals in my office whom I adore. And so that's kind of where I am. I'll renew my license next year and keep at it and enjoy being in the office, which I really, really do, and probably helping with Halloween and those kinds of things. But I'm going to gradually kind of inch out and give more time to my new project.
So before we get to the new project, I'm going to make a couple of comments about your contribution to island life. Here on the island, we have a couple of major real estate franchises, and one of them is John L. Scott. And when Mary and I were living in the UK, I contacted a gentleman who worked for John L. Scott here on the island, who is no longer on the island, and established a contact. And when we were starting to look around, I then was moved to another agent. But you have been with John L. Scott, I think, all the time that you have worked. No?
No.
No, you're giving me the negative sign there.
I was with Windermere for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved up the street.
Up the street. That's right. Everything here on Vashon is up the street and not very far up the street either.
That's right.
But I take this opportunity to tell you that not only the company that you, both companies for which you worked, have incredibly sterling reputations here on the island, but you personally have the same reputation. And that reputation comes to you because of the way that you have carried out your business life.
Thank you.
When we first moved on to the island and the people with whom we dealt left, and then Gary and I became associated very early on, and then we became associated as families. And so I had always, Mary and I had always known that if the time came to sell what we now have as Captain's Quarters, that the only person who would sell it would be Nancy. And so I have told you, as I have told the literally thousands of people that listen to this broadcast, that I am staying in that house. And so don't be counting that commission quite yet.
Don't worry. And I want you to stay in that house.
And I think that most people do. There is a small but active pocket of people who would be happy to see the stern of the captain, but we don't deal with those. Now, let's talk about, and the introduction to it is that it is in some way having to do with scale models.
Mm-hmm.
In the traditional scale of 1 inch to a foot for dollhouses.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is over to you to expand on that a little bit. And then we're going to deal with my regular features and ask you to comment on those.
Okay. So, it involves a house, and I've always loved houses, which is one of the reasons I went into real estate. I love going into people's houses and looking at their stuff. But I've also loved miniature houses ever since I was a little girl. And I had one that wasn't very successful. I built a couple. I made one for my daughter, which she never played with. I did. I made that same one I gave to my granddaughter. She didn't play with it either, but I did. But I've always wanted to build a real, not a dollhouse, but more a work of art. And not anything that you'd play with. And so I thought about it for years and looked online. And, you know, you can buy kits and things like that. But most of them are Victorian, and I didn't want a Victorian. So I just decided a couple of years ago to build my own. And I have two books that I've owned forever of houses that were designed by Gustav Stickley in the early 1900s. He was kind of the father of bringing the arts and crafts craftsman movement to the United States from England.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a magazine he published for 15 years, from about 1901 to 1915. And in 1904, I think it was, he started a home builders club and started publishing house plans, not all designed by him, but I'm pretty sure with a lot of supervision and input from him. And if you belong to the club, you could get plans for free. And so I have two books of these plans that I've just loved looking at for years. And I just started looking at them seriously until I found one that I really liked. And I just decided to start building it. And it's filled my off hours for the last 2 years, and it's probably going to fill a lot more hours for the next 3 or 4 years. I don't know how long it's going to take me.
So how far along in the construction and furnishing and decorating of this house are you?
It's a really interesting plan, and the reason that I picked it, you know, Gustav Stickley, as you might know, are arts and crafts houses are often bungalows, and, you know, with big heavy eaves and lots of wood, and these two that were in the October 1910 issue are city houses, and he says in the magazine that he had been asked to design a couple city houses, which is kind of off his usual path. But they're meant to be built in a city lot, not on the corner, but in the middle of the block, 25 feet wide and 72 feet long. And the rooms are one after another, which makes them really wonderful for a miniature house that you're going to look into, because there aren't rooms hidden behind other rooms. So my husband Gary helped me with the structure the winter of 2018. I had done all the drawings up to that point, and even designed a lot of the furniture, and even made some clothes that are going to hang in the closet. And
at 1 inch to the
yeah, that's the right. Foot. And 1905 Edwardian style. So we finished the shell spring of 2018, and then I started cladding the outside. Obviously, the two long sides are covered with other buildings in this block, so I only had to worry about the front and the back, which is exposed probably to an alley, I would think. And started looking for brick and slate and glass. And I've met lots of people all over the world. My brick is made in England. The tile for the kitchen I got in Germany. The glass came from Belgium. It's just been a lot of fun. I've made a lot of friends, and I have a website if you want to go on and just get the general idea. I don't update it as often as I wish I would, but you get the general idea. And
So put the website.
It's minicraftsman.com, minicraftsman.com. And plenty of space on there to leave a comment, or there's an email address so you can get in touch with me. And I'm making furniture. I'm up to the second floor. Started on the master bedroom, and have most of the main floor done. Not all the furniture, but most of it. And I'm up to the master bedroom, and there's going to be a library and a nursery and two other bedrooms and two bathrooms and a billiard room, and it's a lot of fun. Big house.
So there are a lot of people who listen to us, and now I am not being embellishing, and I am not being over expansive. There are a lot of people who listen to us who in their retired years are have all different kinds of hobbies. And I know that there are people who do structures at the 1 inch to the foot scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're talking about will be of special interest to them. So I'm going to ask you to repeat again the website, and then I'm going to ask you a couple questions about what we've just talked about.
It's minicraftsman.com. And it is true that I think the miniature world is full of older people who have more time to devote to it, but young people do it too. And my husband and I have gone to a couple miniature shows. The very big one is in October in San Jose, California. The first year we went, we came down the first morning and were going to breakfast and walked through the dining room area. And Gary said to me, "Everybody has gray hair, including us." But yes, it is something that retired people are enthusiastic about, and all kinds of websites and magazines, and it's just a lot of fun.
So you alluded to the arts and crafts movement that got its start in England, and I'm somewhat familiar with that, having lived in England for 3 years, but Cambridge is not either an arts and crafts town, and the buildings there are much older than the beginning of the arts and crafts movement. But if you could give us a few groups about the beginning of that, that would, I think, fill in a couple of questions that I can just feel coming at me from across the airwaves. What does that mean, and what was the cause of it getting started in the UK?
Well, it wasn't just the UK. It was Western Europe, but William Morris is probably somebody that a lot of people have heard of. Mm-hmm. And it was at the end of the 20th century, 19th century. And it was mostly a reaction to what the Victorian period had become. Just, you know, everybody can think of Victorian houses with all the gingerbread and the interiors with the furniture so ornate, and the first people who were rebelling against that were wanting to get more down to simplicity, durability, even showing a lot of the construction of furniture with mortise and tenon that you could see, and just to simplify. And Gustav Stickley went to England a couple times and really latched on to this movement and came back. And there were a lot of people in the United States that were doing it too, but he's probably the one that most people know of.
So I'm glad you mentioned William Morris, because I was tempted to throw that name out. And if I were wrong, thus embarrassing myself, which of course I choose not to do as more, any more often than is necessary. But I knew that you knew a lot about it. And so I'm glad that you mentioned him, because he was, I think, if not the founder, certainly one of the people that was most influential mm-hmm. in that whole movement in the in what we call the Edwardian mm-hmm. Edwardian period.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of coincided with Art Nouveau. And then a little later came Frank Lloyd Wright, which everybody knows about. And then as the arts and crafts movements sort of died out, came Art Deco. And but it's that first 20 years of the century that I've always loved the look and the spirit behind it. What I've learned in my research is a really interesting thing, almost kind of creepy, is that Gustav Stickley and some of his associates and other people who were involved in the same thing were forming these almost like communes. And mm-hmm. they would have a lot of houses and a workshop and a community building, and the idea was to teach young people how to make this furniture and kind of get off the grid in a way. They weren't religious, but they were very spiritual in a lot of ways. Gustav spread he got a little over his skis, as they say, and bought a big building in New York City and had offices and classrooms and restaurants and all kinds of stuff. Anyway, he went bankrupt in about 1916, and most of the other people who were involved in this same movement didn't do very well either. But It was not just furniture and houses, but it was a real spiritual thing, which is interesting and something that I didn't know about.
So many of these movements, which have other purposes and other interests, often acquire almost a spiritual component to them. And it should be noted here that you are an artist of many talents, and you work in many different media. You just gave me a lovely card with a lovely note in it that is a piece of your work that's on the cover. Mm-hmm. And that is a meticulously crafted bird, and that one was done in what, oil?
No, it's stitched. It's embroidered.
That's right. That's right. I remember now that
thread.
That you do a lot of that. Yes.
Yeah, I do. And so, the fun thing about this project of mine is I get to do a little bit of everything. It's construction and wood and metals and fabric and plaster, and it's just a little of everything. If I get tired of making windows, I'll switch over and make a bed or something.
So do you use many components like windows that you buy, or do you make everything?
I make everything. And well, I found this glass in Belgium that's just paper thin. My house is going to be a plastic-free environment, I hope. So far, so good. But this very, very thin glass, and then I make the mullions out of wood, and yeah, they're tedious, and I had 25 of them I had to make, and I've done about half of them, and I'll come back and do a couple windows and say, that's it, I've got to do something else.
So the whole subject is fascinating to me, and I love miniatures at all scales, and I don't do anything with it except admire it in other people. I have always admired all of the different pieces of kinds of work that you do, because I've seen much of it in your home. And so I will be listening for your reports on how this is progressing. And we will talk again. I will invite you back sometime later on as this thing moves on. And so, dear hearts out there who are gathered around the captain's chair, we only have a few minutes left. And so I want to get to a couple of pieces of business, including a warning. And the warning is that and this comes from the Nautical Institute. Now, I belong to a number of professional societies, as most people in professions do. I belong to societies which are populated by people who are professional seamen, and one of them is the Nautical Institute, which is headquartered in London, which is also the headquarters for the International Maritime Organization. And they put out a number of different journals, and one of them is called Seaways, and a recent Seaways came to me, and this is the warning for today, and that is that if you ladies out there use tea towels, Nancy, do you use tea towels, or do you have some old rags that you just have hanging around left over from your house project?
Both.
All right. So, this is from the Nautical Institute. One never knows what one is going to get when one opens up pages of these journals. Scorched tea towels pose a fire risk. Now, Susan is sitting over there having her lunch, and she's looking over at me skeptically. So here's the story. Aboard a ship not in the United States, the galley staff took all the tea towels and they washed them and then they put them in the dryer. They took them out of the dryer and they stacked them up while they were all still warm. Now, I do not ever doubt anything that the Nautical Institute tells me. So what happened here was that the ones in the middle were still warm enough to start smoking. So all of you ladies out there, Susan is really giving me the business on this one. All of you ladies out there who use tea towels, make sure that you spread them out. That's the instruction. Those are the instructions from the Nautical Institute. Spread them out so that they don't get hot in the middle and catch on fire. So, all hands from the captain's chair, from your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. We've come yet once again to the end of our time. And as is my custom and tradition, reach out and touch fingertips with someone that you love, and especially those for whom you are responsible. Show a high level of skill in your profession, because nobody wants to be associated with a command that is not technically competent. And then watch out for each other as we go through. And we will meet again next week right here from the captain's chair. And Nancy Love, it was wonderful to have you here. And we will meet here at the captain's chair sometime soon.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.